One evening, when I was in my junior year of high school, my mom and dad went out, leaving me home alone. I had a lot of homework to do, so I spent the whole evening sitting at my desk in my bedroom. My parents probably left around 6 p.m. While I was doing my homework, I put on my headphones and listened to loud music. There was a big storm that night, and my desk was facing the window, so I could see the rain and the lightning outside. My parents got back around 11 p.m. When I saw their car drive up, I took off my headphones. As soon as my mom opened the front door and came inside, I heard her as she shouted my name. "What on earth happened in here?" she demanded in an angry voice. Confused, I ran downstairs. My mom was standing in the hallway with a furious look on her face. She pointed to the floor and yelled, "Was this you?" I looked down and saw that the carpet was covered in muddy footprints. "I have no idea how those got there," I said. "I spent the whole night at my desk doing my work." I watched as the look on her face changed from anger to confusion and then to fear. We both realized it at the same time. Someone else must have been in the house. We followed the trail of footprints, trying to make sense of the whole situation. They started at the back door, which we usually left unlocked. Then we noticed something else. The footprints started at the back door, but there was no trail of footprints leaving through the back door. All of a sudden, we hear something, a loud pounding noise that echoed throughout the house. Then the sound of the front door being wrenched open and slammed shut again. We all ran into the garage and locked the door behind us. My mom took out her cell phone and called the police. "Please come quickly," she shouted. "Someone's in our house." After what seemed like hours, a patrol car arrived with two police officers, a male and a female. One officer stayed with us in the garage while his partner went through the house, searching it room by room. When she came back, the female officer told us that there was no one in the house and it was safe to go back in. As we were all breathing a sigh of relief, she asked, "Whose bedroom is upstairs on the left?" My parents looked at me. "It's mine," I told the officer. She asked us to follow her. As we walked throughout the house, we could see the trail of muddy footprints leading from the back door, through the living room, through the hallway, up the stairs, into my parents' bedroom, and then towards my room. They stopped at my doorway. The female officer pointed at my door, which had been open the whole night. Scrawled on it, in black marker, was the following: 8:47, I see you. 8:53, you forgot to lock the back door. 8:59, you seem focused. 9:24, turn around. 9:47, look at me. 10:15, look at me. 10:37, look at me. 10:49, look at me. For more than 2 hours, someone had been standing in my doorway, watching me. To this day, I still shudder to think what would have happened if I had just turned around.
Part 2 comes from Reddit user Pippinacious on August 16.
I was the last in a long line of grandkids on both sides of the family. No one has ever said as much, but I'm pretty sure I was an oops baby. many glasses of wine and a couple over 40 who thought unplanned pregnancies were for teens. Oops. By the time I came along, both of my grandparents have already passed away, and my grandfathers were elderly and lived in different states. Trying to coordinate travel plans for a family of five, including an infant, was difficult on a budget. Neither of my grandparents were up to frequent trips, so visits were rare and spaced out over periods, long periods of times. Still, both of my parents wanted me to have a relationship with them, so we'd trade phone numbers so they could hear crayon scribbles in return. When I was three, they both started to experience declines in health. First my maternal grandpa, then my paternal one. Fearing the worst, Mom purchased a pair of teddy bears, the kind that had reorders in them so they could record a message that would play when the bear was hugged, and made sure to get a message saved from both. My mom's father died when I was four. A few days after his funeral, I was given a white teddy bear with bright blue eyes that twinkled from beneath a plaid flat cap and a green sweater. When I gave it a squeeze, I heard my grandpa's slight, muffled voice from its stomach. "I love you, Sadie." 2 years later, after Dad's father passed, I got the other one. It was a slight gray color, and the stitching on his face gave him a rather serious expression for a stuffed animal. A pair of red suspenders held up his tan trousers. I fell asleep hugging it, and my dad told me for some years later, with tears in his eyes, that randomly throughout the night, he kept hearing Grandpa's voice coming from my room. "I love you, Sadie." I named my white bear Fran, and my gray bear Jock, put them on a shelf above my bed, where they sat throughout my childhood. Honestly, I didn't give them much thought. They had become fixtures of my room, the same way the lamp and dresser were. Every now and again, I'd come home from school to find one of my parents standing beside my bed, looking at the bears or giving them a little squeeze. Even as time passed, they still recited their single phrase without fail. Aside from those instances, though, Fran and Jock were a little more than dust collectors from my childhood. When I went away to college, the two didn't make the cut and were left behind while I made my way onto the world for the first time. I think my parents were a little disappointed that I wasn't more sentimental over the teddies, but any memories I had of my grandpa's were hazy at best, and I didn't have the same emotional connection that they did. When Mother gently asked about whether I would like them when I moved into my first apartment, I told her no, that they were probably better off with her. "Okay," she said. "Well, they'll be here if you change your mind." I was pretty confident I wouldn't. The next time I went back to my parents' place was to house it while Dad took Mom on their long-awaited vacation out west. He'd been promising her they'd go for over 30 years, and they were both buzzing with excitement. In typical Mom fashion, however, she was also very nervous. "You remember where all the financial documents are in case anything happens to us, right?" she asked from the back seat. "Yes, in the white bin under your bed. And the wills? Fireproof lock box in the back of your closet. And the, I think she's got it, hon," Dad said, reaching back to give her knee a squeeze. Mom sat back. "Just call if you need anything." "I'll be fine. Don't worry. You'll only be gone for a week." "A lot can happen in a week," she said. I gridded her in the rearview mirror, unconcerned, and she made a face at me, but seemed to relax. After I dropped them off, I drove back to their place and started to make myself at home again. I tossed my suitcase on my bed and went to the kitchen to make some dinner and catch up on one of my shows. It had been a while since I had a true, completely free week all to myself, and I planned to take full advantage of it. After I ate, I kicked up my feet, stretched out, and commenced lazy lump mode. I managed to get almost 3 episodes in before I started to nod off. I checked the clock over the TV inside. It was only just after 11. Was I really turning into an old, early-to-bed woman already? The horror. I rolled off the couch and shut off the TV and all the lights, plunging the house into a deep darkness. Even in the inky black, I didn't even have any twinge of nervousness. I had grown up in this house. I knew it like the back of my hand, and all of its creaks and groans were almost comforting. I made my way to my room and flipped on the switch. It had been at least 5 years since I lived there, but my parents haven't done much of a change except store a few bits and bobs in my closet. They said it was so I'd know I'd always have a place with them. I thought it was because changing it would make the fact that I was out for good more real. Whatever the reason was, I appreciated the being familiar with it. As I started to unpack my bag, my eye was drawn to the shelf over my bed. Fran and Jock, ever vigilant, were sitting in the same spots they'd occupied for most of my life. I don't know why, but I couldn't help but smile and reach out to them. I took Fran down first and gave his little cap a tweak before squeezing him around his stomach. "I love you, Sadie," Grandpa said. After putting Fran back, I did the same to Jock, who stared at me with his unusual sternness even as I plucked one red suspender. "I love you, Sadie," Grandpa said. It was the first time I listened to them in a while. Even if they didn't resonate as deeply with me as they did my parents, I was glad to find the recording still worked. A quick trip to the bathroom and a change into my pajamas later, I was in bed and falling asleep. I can't say exactly what woke me up. A nightmare, I figured, given that my heart was beating quite quickly. But I couldn't remember any details. I took a deep breath and rolled over, already falling half asleep again, and found myself face to face with the dark figure on the pillow beside me. I yelped and sat up, grabbing at my phone, my nearest source of light, and shined it towards my bed. Fran was laying on his side beside me. I let out a small chuckle and gave myself a little shake to dismiss the lingering fright that he'd caused and picked him up. "Did you fall off the shelf?" I asked him quietly. "I mustn't put him back too close to the edge earlier, and gravity have done its duty." I gave Fran a gentle squeeze. "Get out." I stared down at the bear and blinked once, very slowly. I must be more sleepy than I realized, I thought. I was hearing things. To prove to myself that it had just been imagination, I squeezed again. "Get out." It was still Grandpa's voice, but instead of the soft warmth it had always had, it sounded cold, almost menacing. I threw Fran across the room where he hit the wall. From over my head, I heard Grandpa's more gravely voice. "Get out." I whipped around and looked out for Jock. He was sitting in the same place as always, but now he was turned around, towards instead of facing forward. Had I put him down like that? I couldn't remember. "Get out!" Grandpa's voice came from Fran again, louder this time. "Get out," Grandpa echoed from Jock. The two went back and forth, the voices getting louder and louder, until I slapped my hands over my ears and leapt from my bed. I wanted to scream, but my voice was stuck between my fear-tangled tongue. I stumbled across my dark room, chased by my long-dead grandfather's voice. "I know you're down there," Jock shouted with Grandpa's voice. I froze. Down there? Down under the shelf? I glanced over my shoulder at the gray bear staring silently down from over my bed. I had to get out of my room. I had to get out of this house. I yanked open the door. "I see you," Fran said in Grandpa's voice. I was halfway out of the hall, tears streaming down my face. I didn't know what was happening. Was I going crazy? Was I dreaming? All I knew that it was my childhood toys were screaming threats at me, and I had to get away from them. I turned towards the stairs. You take one more step. I'll make sure it's your last, Jock bellowed. Get out, Fran roared. From somewhere downstairs, a step creaked. Someone else was in this house. They weren't yelling at me anymore. I realized with a very strange mix of confusion, a relief, a newly formed horror. They were yelling at the intruder who was making their way up the stairs towards me. Get out, my grandfathers howled together. Footsteps clambered across the wood floor downstairs. Something fell over in the living room with a loud crash, and again in the kitchen. Before the back door slammed across the counter as it was thrown open and a car engine rumbled to life. Somehow, I regained my wits enough to run to my parents' room and look out the window to the driveway below. An SUV was peeling backwards out into the street. It slammed into the neighbor's mailbox, righted itself, and then screeched off into the night. A heavy quiet had fallen over the house again. After waiting a few long, tense minutes, I crept back across the hall and peeked into my room. Fran and Jock were where I'd left them. Both completely silent. When they stayed the way, I hesitantly approached Fran, who was lying on his side with his little flat cap beside him. I picked him up and with trembling hands squeezed his stomach. I love you, Sadie, Grandpa said warmly. I put his cap back on his head and gently put him back on the shelf beside Jock and backed out of the room, watching him the whole time with wide eyes. As I rounded the corner, heading downstairs to the phone, I heard Grandpa's voice trailing after me. I love you, Sadie. The police arrived a bit later, following my frantic call to 911. I filed the report, leaving out the bit about my talking bears, and allowed them to collect whatever evidence they could. Ever so often, I found myself glancing at the stairs, almost like I was expecting a repeat of whatever had just happened. It never came, and the cops wrapped it up, leaving me alone again. When I called my parents to tell them about the break-in, they immediately wanted to rush home, but I assured them there was no need. Really, I said, I don't think I have anything to worry about. We could be on the next plane, Mom insisted. No, I'm okay. Whoever that guy was, I'm pretty sure he won't be back. It took a few more go-arounds, but I eventually convinced them that I was safe. And I felt it too. For the most part, after the initial shock had worn off, and I'd had time to process what had happened, I really was okay. I couldn't explain it. I couldn't tell anyone what happened without sounding crazy. But I knew it had been real, and I knew, as long as I had Fran and Jock sitting on the shelf above my bed, I could sleep easy. A few days later, the cops did find the guy who broke in. He was a coworker of my dad's who'd overheard he'd be out of town. He thought the house would be empty and easy pickings. When he tried to tell them about the two crazy guys upstairs and their violent threats, they rolled their eyes and laughed at him. He was very surprised to hear that only a 22-year-old woman had been in the house during his botched burglary. When I returned home to my apartment a week later, Fran and Jock were with me. I keep them on the TV stand in the living room now, where they have a full view of the front door. Whenever I start to feel a little anxious about being alone, I'll give them bears a little squeeze and a smile as they speak. I love you, Sadie. And now I respond. I love you both too. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode, and just wanted to remind you, you could follow me on Instagram, which is Magdala95. It's also the same handle as my Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on, not Snapchat, I'm still trying to change that at the moment. And you can find me on anywhere podcasts are available. And I also have a website. It is valswebsite.com. Yes, very creative. I couldn't think of shit of what to put. If you want, follow me there. I also have a Threadless store if you guys want merch. There's a shit ton of them right there too. It's Threadless / activate the amygdala if you want that merch. And we'll see you soon. Bye.